In 2022, the world poured like over $1 trillion into the global energy transition.
Yeah, which is just a staggering amount of money.
Right. But if you look at the source documents driving all that cash, almost none of it was actually motivated by, the traditional idea of saving the environment.
Exactly. It wasn't about saving the whales.
No, not at all. Over the last decade, this whole concept of going green, it quietly mutated into literally the most ruthless, high-stakes arms race for military and economic dominance of the 21st century.
It really did.
I mean, we are talking about a massive shift in human history happening right under our noses, where climate policy basically became the ultimate chess piece for global hegemony.
It completely redefines how we even understand international relations today.
Yeah.
We are watching the real-time rewiring of global power,
Yeah.
shifting entirely away from the systems that have run the world for, well, the last century and a half.
Yeah, and today we are looking at a stack of sources that map out exactly how this happened.
The blueprint, basically.
Right. And the core document here is this incredibly fascinating piece of analysis titled Dossier Trump 2015 to 2029. And we're specifically looking at Chapter 13, which is Climate, Energy, and the Future.
A very heavy title, but a crucial document.
Absolutely. These sources break down this incredibly volatile, like 14-year period. It is a time when the entire geopolitical landscape was just caught in this brutal tug of war between the old fossil fuel world order on one side
Right.
and this explosive, chaotic, new sustainable energy transition on the other. So, okay, let's unpack this. Our mission for this deep dive is to decode the actual mechanics of that transition.
Yeah, how it all actually works under the hood.
Exactly. We want to look at how different global powers played their hands, and most importantly, what this fundamental rewiring means for you, the listener.
And while we're diving into some pretty heavy geopolitical and macroeconomic territory today, shifting supply chains, national security doctrines, foreign investment
It's
flows,
all the big buzzword.
right, all the heavy stuff. But we are going to keep it highly accessible. The objective is not to read you a dry academic paper.
Please no.
Yeah, no one wants that. The objective is to show you how these massive, abstract global shifts actually trickle down to your daily life.
Because they really do.
They do, because the outcome of this geopolitical chess match impacts everything from, the price you pay to heat your home to the long-term stability of the actual economy you live in.
Yeah, it's inescapable. So, I mean, we all know the traditional map of global power is drawn in oil pipelines, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Countries like Russia, Saudi Arabia, the United States, Canada, Norway, the Gulf states, they derive massive international veto power from their fossil fuel reserves. For over a century, energy wasn't just like a commodity you buy and sell.
No, it was the primary geopolitical instrument of leverage.
Exactly.
And that leverage was absolute. I mean, the entire modern logistics network, heavy industry, global wealth generation, all of it required a continuous feed of oil, gas, and coal. If you controlled the tap, you controlled the geopolitical temperature.
Wow, yeah.
But the dossier highlights this really distinct turning point where governments began to experience what they call a strategic awakening regarding climate change.
And according to our sources, that awakening wasn't driven by, some sudden environmental altruism. They didn't just wake up and decide to be nice to the planet.
No, not at all. It was pure pragmatism.
Right. The scientific reality of climate change transformed from this, like, distant future environmental concern into a present-day economic wrecking ball. The dossier details extreme weather, crippling droughts, catastrophic floods.
Food insecurity.
Yes, food insecurity and massive migration streams.
And the thing to understand is that those aren't just ecological tragedies, right? They are systemic economic failures.
Right, they hit the bottom line.
Exactly. If a severe drought drops the water levels in a major shipping canal, global supply chains halt.
Which we've literally seen happen.
Yeah, we have. And if extreme heat collapses an agricultural sector, you get food inflation and eventually civil unrest. So governments realized that climate policy was no longer just a luxury for future generations.
Right.
It became a short-term strategic necessity just to maintain baseline economic stability. I mean, you cannot run a thriving, competitive economy if your physical infrastructure is constantly being washed away or starved of water.
Which, ultimately culminated in the Paris Agreement. It was this rare moment of global consensus where nearly every country on Earth agreed to limit temperature
It was
rise.
huge at the time.
It was. But reading through the source material, it really feels like the Paris Agreement only established a consensus on what the problem was, not how to actually solve it.
Oh, definitely. Symbolism does not guarantee long-term execution.
Yeah.
The political support required to fundamentally rebuild the global energy infrastructure is incredibly fragile. Acknowledging that the current system is economically unsustainable, that's easy. But agreeing to absorb the massive upfront costs of transitioning away from that system, that is where the global consensus just completely shatters.
Right, because my analogy for this is, it's like realizing the foundation of your house is actively sinking.
Okay, yeah.
You can't just keep painting the walls, right?
Right.
You have to rethink the entire structural integrity of the building, even if it's incredibly inconvenient and super expensive.
That is a great way to put it, because you can't just legislate a new energy grid into existence without creating massive friction.
Right.
And since political support for that friction isn't guaranteed, we saw different regions of the world take wildly divergent, just heavily polarized approaches.
Yeah, and nowhere is this tension more heavily documented in our sources than in the United States.
Oh, the American strategy during this period is a fascinating study in political whiplash.
It really is. And, you know, before we dive into the specifics of U.S. policy, I want to be perfectly clear with you, the listener, about our approach here.
Always good to set the ground rules.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The dossier we are analyzing extensively covers the America First doctrine, particularly under the Trump administration.
Right.
And our goal today is to impartially report the factual mechanics and the arguments outlined in the text. We are not endorsing any political viewpoint here. Yeah. We are simply looking at the machinery of these policies and how they impacted the global board.
Fair enough. And looking at that machinery, the dossier outlines this constant violent shifting of priorities in the U.S.
Whiplash is the right word.
It is. Depending on the administration, the country's energy strategy swung like a pendulum. In some cycles, the focus leaned heavily into climate policy, emissions reductions, and international cooperation.
Right.
Then, literally overnight, the pendulum would swing entirely in the opposite direction toward a fierce prioritization of fossil fuels, energy independence, and just raw economic competitiveness.
Yeah, and under the America First doctrine, energy was inextricably linked to national strength.
Mm-hmm.
Like there was a heavy emphasis on maximizing oil and gas production and really expanding energy exports.
Right, exporting that power.
Exactly. And the proponents of this strategy, they make a very pragmatic argument in the text. They argue that cheap, abundant fossil energy is just the fastest way to stimulate immediate economic growth.
Which is true on paper.
Yeah, it creates blue-collar jobs, it keeps domestic manufacturing competitive, and it ensures the country isn't reliant on foreign powers for its baseline energy needs.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, the critics of that specific policy, as presented in the dossier, they focused on the massive opportunity costs.
Or the long-term gain.
Exactly. Their argument was that by doubling down on mature, older technologies, a nation risks slowing down its investments in the technologies of the future.
Oh, I see.
If you are focused entirely on extracting more oil today, you might miss the R&D window for the next generation of battery technology. And by doing that, you are effectively handing the future technological advantage to rival nations.
I mean, I'm struggling to square this, though. If the U.S. is ripping up its energy policy basically every 4 years, swinging from heavy fossil fuel subsidies over to green energy mandates and then back again, how does anything actually get built?
It's a huge problem.
Right. Like, an energy company can't survive that kind of whiplash. Wouldn't they just offshore their capital completely?
Well, often they just freeze.
They just do nothing.
Yeah, they do nothing. The sources note that this domestic ping-pong effect created a deeply chaotic investment climate.
I can imagine.
Some infrastructure projects were hastily rushed just to beat a changing regulatory deadline before an upcoming election.
Wow.
While other massive necessary projects were indefinitely delayed, the risk of changing regulations was simply too high for investors to commit long-term capital.
See, that makes the contrast with the European Union so stark in this document.
Mm.
Because while the U.S. was rapidly shifting its course every election cycle, Europe took a fundamentally different path with what they called the European Green Deal.
Yeah, what's fascinating here is how the EU treated the transition. They didn't view climate policy as an environmental initiative sitting alongside their economic strategy.
Right, like a side project.
Exactly. Instead, the climate policy became their overarching economic and strategic policy. The objectives were absolute. Complete climate neutrality, aggressively enforcing the greening of industry, mandating energy savings, and pouring public investment into sustainable innovation.
They basically bet the entire European economy on being the first to fully transition.
They really did.
But let's look at the friction there, because I have to push back a little. If the U.S. is focused on maximizing its current tangible economic output through cheap fossil fuels,
right,
and the EU is trying to forcibly mandate a green future through heavy regulation and carbon taxes, doesn't that inherently kill Europe's immediate global competitiveness?
Yeah.
Doesn't that make climate policy one of the most polarizing political battlegrounds of our time?
Oh, absolutely. That is the exact debate highlighted in the sources.
Yeah.
Climate policy completely stopped being a debate about science. It morphed into a brutal, highly polarized debate about costs, jobs, and national sovereignty.
Right.
The EU prioritized long-term adaptation and avoiding catastrophic future costs. But internally, I mean, they faced severe resistance over the immediate staggering costs of that transition.
The sticker shock.
Exactly. The potential loss of heavy industry to places with cheaper energy and the societal blowback from populations losing jobs in the traditional fossil sector.
But here's where it gets really interesting. Because while politicians are arguing over domestic regulations and carbon taxes, the actual physical mechanics of global power are quietly packing up and moving.
Yes.
We are seeing a monumental shift away from oil rigs toward tech labs and mining operations.
It's a total pivot. The energy transition is not just a matter of swapping out coal plants for wind turbines.
Right, it's not a one-to-one trade.
No, it is an all-out global sprint to dominate entirely new industrial supply chains. Nations are racing to corner the market on manufacturing solar panels, hydrogen technology, smart electricity grids, next-generation nuclear energy, and advanced batteries.
And let's talk about the hardware for a second, because to build a smart grid, to manufacture a billion electric vehicle batteries, to construct massive fields of commercial solar panels, well, you can't build those things out of oil.
No, you can't.
You need a completely different set of raw materials.
The critical minerals.
Right.
The dossier explicitly lists the foundational building blocks of this new sustainable economy. We are talking about lithium, nickel, cobalt, copper, and rare earth metals.
The new oil.
Essentially, yes. And just like oil, these resources are incredibly concentrated in very specific parts of the world.
So if I'm understanding this, we are basically trading our dependence on one atlas of the world, like the map of oil fields and pipelines, for a completely new atlas based on who controls the lithium flats and the cobalt mines.
That's exactly it. The geopolitical attention officially shifted. If a nation controls the supply chain for these critical minerals, they hold the exact same kind of geopolitical leverage that an oil-rich nation held in the 20th century.
Wow.
The transition to green energy is fundamentally a transition of geopolitical power.
But I want to dig into the mechanism of that leverage for a second, because it feels different than oil to me.
How so?
Well, with oil, leverage is continuous.
Right.
Right, you have to buy millions of barrels every single month just to keep your economy's lights on.
Right, it's a constant feed.
Exactly. But with critical minerals, the leverage seems front-loaded. Like, you only buy a solar panel or an electric vehicle battery once a decade.
Mm-hmm.
So where is the ongoing power in that?
That is a great distinction. The geopolitical power isn't in turning off a daily tap anymore.
Okay.
It is in preventing rivals from building their next generation infrastructure in the first place.
Oh, wow.
Furthermore, the leverage isn't just in the mining of the dirt. It is in the chemical refining.
Processing.
Exactly. If country A mines the lithium, but country B owns 80% of the highly specialized processing plants that turn that raw dirt into actual battery-grade material.
Country B has the real power.
Yes. Country B actually holds the choke point. They can literally dictate who gets to build the technology of the future.
That is wild. And, you know, for a while, this shift from continuous oil leverage to this front-loaded mineral leverage, it was playing out somewhat theoretically.
Yeah, a slow burn.
Right, a slow grinding evolution of global supply chains.
Mm-hmm.
But then, as the dossier outlines, this slow shift was violently accelerated by a real-world crisis in 2022.
The war in Ukraine.
Yeah.
When the conflict broke out, Europe was suddenly face-to-face with a crippling energy crisis.
It was chaos.
Complete chaos. They experienced skyrocketing energy prices, massive supply chain bottlenecks, and immense geopolitical vulnerability just due to their heavy reliance on pipeline gas from Russia.
Right. This theoretical transition just hit a brick wall. You had entire industrial sectors in Europe literally wondering if they could afford to keep their factories running through the winter.
Yeah, and if we connect this to the bigger picture, the war permanently altered the global debate.
It changed everything.
Literally overnight, energy policy was stripped of its environmental or purely economic framing. It instantly became a hard, non-negotiable national security issue.
Because the realization was just stark and immediate. If you do not control your energy supply, you do not control your national security.
Period. And this vulnerability led to an incredible, desperate acceleration of investments.
Right.
We saw massive capital injected into renewable energy projects simply because no foreign power can embargo the sun or the wind.
That's a great point.
But we also saw a rapid, massive build-out of liquefied natural gas or LNG infrastructure.
And let's break down the mechanics of LNG for a second because the sources place a lot of weight on it.
Yeah.
Why does shifting from pipeline gas to liquefied natural gas change the geopolitical security dynamic so drastically?
Well, a traditional pipeline physically hostages you to the country at the other end.
Right, you're literally connected to them.
You are tethered to their political stability and their goodwill. But LNG severs that physical tether.
Wow.
By supercooling the gas into a liquid, you can load it onto ships. Suddenly, natural gas transforms from a regional monopoly into a globally traded commodity.
Oh, I see.
If one supplier becomes hostile, you can just reroute ships and swap suppliers overnight. It is a massive upgrade in national security flexibility.
But, you can't buy all this LNG infrastructure or build a totally new smart grid without an unimaginable amount of capital.
Trillions.
Right. Whether a country is driven by the existential fear of climate change or the hard national security fear of being cut off from their energy supply, they need hundreds of billions of dollars. And capital markets, they do not care about patriotism or environmentalism.
No, they don't.
They care about risk.
Which brings us to a really special point highlighted in the dossier, the profound impact of political instability on long-term investments.
This is key.
When a massive corporation or an institutional investor decides to build an offshore wind farm or a new battery manufacturing plant, they are not looking for a quick 3-year return.
No.
These are monumental engineering feats with investment horizons spanning 20 to 40 years.
Yeah, trying to fund a 40-year energy grid transition under a 4-year election cycle. It's like trying to build a skyscraper when the lead architect gets fired and replaced every time you finish a single floor.
That's exactly what it's like.
The blueprints change, the permits get revoked, the tax incentives disappear. Eventually, the investors just stop paying for concrete.
That analogy perfectly captures the friction detailed in the sources. Investors require absolute predictability. They need stable regulations, long-term planning, and statutory legal certainty.
Right.
When governments constantly change their minds, it creates unmanageable risk. Subsidies vanish. Environmental permits are suddenly weaponized.
Which points right back to that contrast between the U.S. and the EU investment climates we talked about earlier.
Yes, exactly.
In the U.S., the rules of the game kept changing with the political winds. The dossier notes that while the U.S. had incredible raw economic power, the regulatory whiplash made long-term capital really hesitant.
Very hesitant.
Meanwhile, the EU tried to capitalize on that hesitancy by offering statutory certainty.
Right. The EU established multi-year programs and enshrined their climate goals in hard law.
So they locked it in.
They locked it in. They attempted to signal to global capital markets, we might be a heavily regulated environment and we might have high upfront costs, but our rules are not going to change after the next election.
They wanted to be the safe bet.
Exactly. They prioritized creating a stable horizon for that 40-year capital, even as they heavily debated the immediate impacts on their own heavy industry.
So what does this all mean for you? Why does the geopolitical tension over lithium refining or the statutory certainty of European law matter to your daily life?
It's the million-dollar question.
It really is. And it matters because capital, the money that builds the infrastructure, creates the high-paying jobs, and secures the technological edge, it flows like water to the path of least resistance.
Yes.
It flows to stable countries.
If a country constantly changes its mind on energy policy, the money simply goes somewhere else.
Right.
And when the money leaves, the jobs leave and the innovation leaves. Ultimately, the price of your energy future and the strength of your local economy is directly tied to the political stability of your government.
It is a really sobering reality. The global board is just being completely reset.
The dossier offers a historical perspective that is vital to understanding the scale of this reset.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. This energy transition is not just a policy shift. it is entirely comparable to the massive industrial revolutions of the past.
Oh.
Think about the advent of steam power, the rollout of widespread electricity, or the dawn of digitalization.
Right. Game changer.
Complete game changers. Those transitions completely redrew the economic relationships of the world. They created new superpowers and left others completely behind.
Yeah.
The transition from fossil fuels to sustainable, mineral-heavy technology will do the exact same thing for the 21st century.
Which, I mean, leaves us with the ultimate question posed by the source material, a question that we are all going to have to live through the answer to.
Right.
Will this massive energy transition unite the world through shared technological progress and a common security goal? Mm-hmm. Or will it just create fierce new geopolitical rivalries over raw materials, supply chains, and economic dominance?
It is the defining question of our time. And it leaves us with a highly provocative thought to consider, building on the mechanics we've discussed today.
Let's hear it.
If the geopolitical map has shifted from oil fields to critical minerals, what happens when the nations that control the vast majority of the world's lithium and cobalt fully realize the immense front-loaded leverage they now hold?
Oh, man.
Right. Could we see the rise of new, incredibly powerful cartels,
mm-hmm.
essentially an OPEC for batteries?
An OPEC for batteries.
Yeah. And if a cartel like that forms, how will the traditional global powers react to that sudden, drastic shift in leverage?
An OPEC for batteries. That really puts the whole new Atlas concept into perspective, and it is a fascinating concept to mull over.
It's a little scary, honestly.
It really is.
Yeah.
Well, that wraps up our deep dive into Chapter 13, but do not go anywhere, because next time we are pulling back the curtain on Chapter 14 of the dossier.
I'm looking forward to it.
We touched on how money hates instability today, but next time we are looking at the literal direct economic price of political chaos. We will be analyzing the brutal reality of national debt, exploding deficits, runaway inflation, and the cutthroat global battle for foreign investments. You definitely won't want to miss it.
It promises to be a very illuminating discussion on the mechanics of global finance.
Until then, remember that the ground beneath our feet and the energy that powers it is shifting faster than we think. Stay curious.